Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Well, get this. According to the United Nations, 62 million girls in the world are not in school. 100 million girls are projected to become child bride over the next years, and 700% of the world's 70% of the world's poorest people are females. Millions of girls worldwide face challenges, including lack of access to education, early marriage, and lack of access to reproductive health services. October 11th is the International Day of the Girl Child, a UN observance that aims to highlight and address the needs and challenges girls face while promoting girls' empowerment and the fulfillment of their human rights. The theme this year is Vision for 2030, Achieving the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. On the show today, we will discuss the state of the girl child and what is being done to address some of their challenges. Okay, so joining me in the studio here is Tausi Swedi. She is founder and CEO of Childbirth Survival International, CSI, an organization whose mission includes improving the quality of health services and information for pregnant women, newborns, and youth in marginalized communities in Baltimore, Maryland, and abroad, including in Africa. Ms. Swedi, welcome to Health Chat.
Thank you so much, Lenord.
It's so good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
So listen, we will have our discussion with Ms. Swedi in a second. But first, let's go to Cameroon with our reporter, Edwin Kinzeka.
2 months old Pride Nalova cries as her mother slaughters and roasts chicken in a restaurant in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Beatrice Nalova, the baby's 15-year-old mother, says she was forced to drop out of school when her mother found out that she was pregnant.
And when she took me to a nearby hospital, the doctor found out that I was 6 months pregnant. And my mother hid it from my father and tried to evacuate the pregnancy. So it didn't work. At last, I gave birth. And my father was surprised that I was pregnant. He drove me out of the house. He said it's something like a bad luck in the family. I left. I went and stayed with my aunt.
Beatrice was a student at Government Bilingual High School in Coleton in Yaoundé. Philemon Enonchong, the school vice principal, says they do not allow pregnant girls to study alongside their peers in the school.
When we discover that a student is pregnant, we advise the parents to come and take the child back home. We will not just drive the child away or create a scene. When it's time for the exams, this child can come back and write.
The Cameroon Medical Council reports that 25% of pregnancies occur in girls of school age and 20% of pregnant teens do not return to school. Dr. Ndansi Elvis Noka with the Unite for Health Foundation, a group that fights unwanted pregnancies and abortions, says the council's figures may be low because less than 30% of the population visit conventional health services.
Their fear is a fear of parental ostracization, like my mom is going to kill me, my dad is going to slaughter me, what are my friends going to think about me? But 25% is what government has identified based on those who have already overcome the fear of parents, the fear of friends, the fear of teacher.
Contraceptives are still taboo in most communities and poverty levels are still very high, forcing many girls into prostitution. The country's demographic health survey adds that traditional practices which encourage early marriages, especially in the Muslim-dominated northern regions, are also responsible for teenage pregnancies. Psychologist Miren Jenje says the increase in teenage pregnancies also is linked to increased communication and interaction between peoples.
On est à une période où le monde est carrément ouvert.
She says this is a period when the world is completely a global village and people can communicate and even see themselves at all moments and wherever they are. She says adolescent girls have a greater challenge because they are exposed to the internet and social media, which have videos that entice them to try having sexual relations. Gynecologist Vivian Verbe-Sally of Cameroon's Ministry of Health says severe bleeding, infections, and high blood pressure before and after birth are some complications that cause death during childbirth among girls under the age of 15. She did not have statistics on how many teenagers die while giving birth.
When a little girl gets pregnant at that age, she is likely to have what you call an obstructed labor because of a small pelvis. And because of that, if she's not having the baby in a center where the staff is qualified to identify that on time and do a C-section to save the baby, she will likely have what you call vesicovaginal fistula.
The World Health Organization says teenage pregnancies constitute a serious health and social problem worldwide, most of them occurring in low- and middle-income countries. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And Thausi, you heard this package, which was really almost like an overview of some of the challenges that teen girls are confronted with. And it touches on so many different aspects of the big picture. Let me have your thoughts, your reaction on this. First of all, with the issue of teen pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. There was a very in-depth package. And just to say that there's so many Beatrices out there, mm-hmm. and even younger. So Beatrice, the mother, she's 15 years old. And 16 million Beatrices get pregnant every year.
Wow.
Even more than that, and they give birth. And a lot of them die during pregnancy. 50,000 girls die annually between the ages of 15 and 19 in the process of giving birth. And that's because, again, you know, their physiology is not yet up to speed to deliver a baby. Their pelvises are still narrow. They don't have access to health services. There's a lot of stigma associated with that. So with, you know, with this package, a lot of issues are raised. There's sexual health education where the mother, you know, she did not know her daughter was pregnant until she was 6 months pregnant, mm-hmm. and she was trying to get rid of the pregnancy. That in itself shows that there are many gaps where mothers of today, they're not engaging and sitting down with their daughters to have that one-on-one conversation. And this goes back to the culture that we discussed earlier, where it's not, in many sub-Saharan African communities, mothers, it's not their role to educate their girls about their sexual health or their reproductive health or what it means to begin menstruation. And that has created a lot of problems because with all the technology that's out there, it is outpacing the culture. Mm-hmm. So the technology is so far ahead. Girls have access to the internet. They have access to their peers are, you know, pretty much out there learning stuff that many of these girls don't know. And that has created that gap where adults and girls, many Beatrices out there, have been left behind. They have no idea what menstruation is. They have no idea what puberty is. They have no idea what sex is. And understanding that a lot of these girls, they don't have sex because they want to get pregnant. Many of them are forced. Many of them are raped. Many mm-hmm. of them are coerced. And so it's understanding there's so many entry points to address this issue of teenage pregnancies.
It's very, very complex. And I mean, you said so many interesting things here. One of the things that I wanted to touch on is the fact that you said it's not the mother's role to educate the child mm-hmm. about, you know, the reproductive health,
right.
sexual health. Whose role is it or why is that?
Again, going back to culture. So traditionally, a girl, I know, like, for example, some communities in Uganda, some tribes in Uganda, where a mother will not tell the daughter that, you know, what to expect when you're going through, you know, puberty or adolescence. And the daughter is sent to the grandmother or to an aunt, you know, the sister, the father's sister or somebody else, but not the mother. And this goes back to what's taboo and what's not taboo. So in some communities, that is still the practice where it is taboo for a mother to sit down and tell her daughter, you know, what sex is all about, what it means to be when you begin menstruating, what it means to get pregnant. Imagine if mothers had that opportunity to tell their daughters what these things meant. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll be having all these pregnancies that are happening, especially in developing countries when it comes to sub-Saharan Africa.
Wow, that's it's a very complex issue because mm-hmm. I know, and the thing also is it's not just mothers that are not literate. You have mothers that are modern, considered modern, but still do not talk to their children, their daughters, about, you know, reproductive health.
Right. It's a journey. I mean, I myself, I have a daughter. So when she turned 10, I told her, when you turn 10, we're going to have a certain conversation. And she was like, what are we going to be talking about? And as somebody who's traveled, I have spoken with so many girls, But when it came to my own daughter, I was like, where do I start this conversation? Where do I start this conversation with this 10-year-old girl? You look at them, you know, they're so young, so vulnerable. And these conversations need to be made, and so that girls understand. And I just made it very light. And I told her, you know, because now a girls start menstruating at 8, 9, 10. And I'm concerned as a parent, as a mother, what does that mean for my daughter who's turning 10? So I kind of just had a very light conversation with her. And this is her response: Mom, I'm still too young for all that, you know, to hear all that. So, you know, that's just her here. But then there's so many girls that need that outreach. They need their mothers to be having these conversations with them. So even if it might seem like, what my daughter said, this, I'm not ready, like, that's not for me to hear now. At least they have an idea. And should anything happen, they'll come running back to their mothers. Hey, Mom, you remember this, what you told me? That's true. Saw blood. But a lot of girls, they start their periods and they have no idea what that is.
Yes, it's incredible. Now, in my introduction, I touched on the International Day of the Girl Child, and this is going, this is on the 11th. What is the significance of such a day, for, especially for your work?
It's an important day because it like I said, it amplifies the voice for the girl child. A lot of them are voiceless. A lot of them are suffering. A lot of them are struggling. A lot of them are intimidated. And as many girls, I'm yet to meet a girl anywhere who doesn't want to go to school. I'm yet to meet a girl who doesn't have big dreams. They're there, but it's just that the environments that they're in, the networks that they're in, they're not supporting them. The environments are not conducive enough. You know, a girl says she wants to go to school, she probably might be beaten. What are you talking about? You know, girls don't go to school. Girls stay home and they cook and they clean. And despite the, you know, the progress that's being made, a lot more needs to be made, especially in rural communities where a girl is still valued as a source of dowry, a source of income for a family. She gets to a certain age and then she's married off, not understanding that marrying her off at a young age not only creates problems for her, but also for her family and the community as well.
So then when we look at where we are today, I know we talked about there are challenges and there are many, many challenges for the girls. But then we went from the Millennium Development Goals and then moving forward with the Agenda 2030 with the Sustainable Development Goals. What are some of the improvements that we have seen? As some observers say, there have been some improvements. What are some of those improvements and where do we go from there?
There have been improvements, and I'll speak more on SDG 3 and 4 because they're closely related to the work that Childbirth Survival International does. And, you know, having that consciousness that the work that we're doing feeds into those, but understanding that it also kind of unfolds with on the rest of the other SDGs as well. And so child mortality has reduced, you know, infant mortality has reduced, maternal mortality has reduced, but there's still too many mothers dying. Even one mother dying, that is way too much. So it's progress, but it's slow. So educating the adults and girl, why the adults and girl, she's the power to achieving that vision for 2030, is because we need girls in school. We need to reduce maternal mortalities, which adolescent girls 15 to 19 are the ones contributing to that matrix. We need to reduce infant mortality. It's babies born to adolescent mothers. They're the ones who are dying in numbers. We need to make sure that girls are in school so that families can do better, communities can do better, and even countries. You know, often when you talk about the girl child, some thoughts can kind of end at a certain level whereby it's just about a girl going to school. But look at it broadly. Look at it at what it means for a country's GDP. If a girl goes to school, you know, she goes to school, she graduates, she advances to post-secondary, she graduates, she becomes a productive person, you know, in her community, she becomes a workforce that is making, you know, that is earning an income and also giving back to markets. That is a plus for the country. Now imagine if so many other girls were in that position, unlike just saying that she just needs to go to school. But I also think the mindset needs to change from the government level to businesses, to communities, to institutions. The mindset needs to change and understand educating a girl is not just about her going to school. It's about global prosperity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are some who say that so much emphasis and focus has been put on girls. What about the boys?
Absolutely.
Because boys seem to be left behind as girls are progressing.
Right. And I have two boys and a girl.
Okay.
So I always think that's a very fair question. And considering the work that I do advances a lot of the work for women and girls, but we also have youth programs. And I also often say that we don't want to advance the girls so much and then leave the boys behind and then be like, oh, now we need a boys' movement. But I don't think that will happen because historically the girl child has been left behind. You know, if you go back way, way back where there is female infanticide, where, you know, girls, the girl child was buried alive, all these issues kind of go way back to the value of the girl child. Yes. She's the first one to be killed. She's the first one to be denied an education. She was the first one, if there was a choice between the boy child and the girl child, the girl child wouldn't stand any chance in terms of accessing opportunities or resources. So it goes a little deeper than this new movement of why the girl child. It's also understanding where this is coming from. You know, you have, you know, you look at sub-Saharan Africa, it has the world's largest, youngest population.
Yes.
Of those, half are girls. Girls. If we don't educate them, if we don't empower them, then what are we talking about?
Yes.
You know, we cannot keep on moving the train forward for the boy child, but then also think of the girl child in the process. We need both of them to be at the same level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when we look at the harnessing the demographic dividend, you really have to bring both of them at the table.
Right.
And so we are going to continue the conversation in a moment. We have to take a short break and come back for this very, very enlightening conversation with Tausi Swedi. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us. If you are just joining us, we are discussing today the state of the girl child. Absolutely. And our guest is Tausi Swedi. She is founder and CEO of Childbirth Survival International, CSI. So before the break, we touched on so many different issues as it pertains to girls. Now, let's look at what your organization is doing in this regard and how you guys are working, especially on the ground in Africa. Tell us a little more about your mission.
So CSI is dedicated to advocate, improve, and strengthen the quality, access, and delivery of health services and information. We put those two words together, health services and information, together because it's important. Health services are pretty much available, even though they might not be of standard quality.
Yes.
They are available. But what's lacking is the information. Communities don't know where these services are. Communities don't know where to find the services.
Mm-hmm.
And so we combine those two to make sure that we're reaching a specific group of vulnerable people, which is the pregnant women, newborns, children under 5 years old, and the adolescent child, girl and boy. And that is because they're marginalized. They don't get the services and information that they're supposed to be receiving. So Childbirth Survival International was founded in 2013 by myself and Mama Stella Mpanda, who's based in Tanzania. And initially, I remember when we first started, we were trying to target pregnant women in prisons.
Mm.
You know, the very, very underreached.
Wow.
Completely. But going around the formation and the establishment and the politics, it turned out to be a long road. And we're like, you know what? You still have people struggling in regular communities, in the rural area and the urban areas. So we figured, let's kind of go back mainstream. Mm-hmm. And at some point, if the road clears to go back to, you know, address maternity health in prisons, you know, also newborn health, that'll be a great idea. But that's how initially we kind of started off. Okay. And so when it comes to the International Day of the Girl Child, we have a program called Girl Talk, Girl Power. Talking about girls' issues, empowering girls to love themselves, understand themselves, be each other's sisters' keepers, and be able to support and lift each other up, which I think is very much needed, especially in this day and age where you don't have a lot of women supporting women. And that is something that we really need, bringing it from the bottom up. Girls need to learn how to support each other. So when they're women, they can support each other. And that also feeds into prosperity. So Girl Talk, Girl Power is based in Tanzania, Uganda, and also South Africa. We have teams on the ground, skilled team, you know, a skilled team of different disciplines. You know, we have healthcare providers, we have nurses, we have teachers, and they engage with girls, addressing the specific issues that are important for the girl child, menstruation, reproductive health, sexual health. And we work with schools, with communities. And so far, the feedback that we have gotten, especially from schools, is that the program is phenomenal. Because we come in as a third party, engaging with the students, working with the schools, and we educate the girls in a way the schools don't really quite educate them, going back to the culture and the stigma where a potato is not called a potato. Mm-hmm. You know, it's called something else, and that doesn't help a child understand. So we come in with fun, interactive ways to make the girl child understand her body, understand menstruation, understand teenage pregnancies, understand the consequences of getting pregnant at a certain age, and moving the agenda forward to advance her, her family, and the community.
Oh, very nice. Mm-hmm. So then, how much impact have you seen since you started your work?
Tremendous. So far, we have impacted over 1,000 girls, adults and girls, focusing mostly at the senior one, senior two level, because that's when they kind of, you know, transition from primary seven and then they go into a secondary school. And that is where kind of girls tend to fall out, where they're going, they finish primary, they're moving on to secondary. It's a kind of a different world. You have older kids in the school and they don't quite understand some of the things that they'll be hearing about. So we specifically engage with the senior one, senior two, and we also have, you know, older kids, but we really target the senior one, senior two girls so that we are able to break it out, break it down for them, educate them, empower them. And we also give out sanitary pads so that they can stay in school. You know, menstruation has been a big barrier for the girl child to stay in school and prosper. And they drop out, not because they want to drop out. They are forced to drop out because they don't have sanitary pads. They don't have water. They don't have washing facilities. And these create challenges for the girl child to learn. So we go in and engage with them. And not only that, but we also help them stay in school and achieve their dreams. And it's been remarkable, especially in Tanzania and Uganda, where we have been doing this since 2014.
It's incredible. I mean, you mentioned sanitary pads, and to think that something which is so basic
absolutely
and can be the turning point if a girl is going to stay in school or not. It's just incredible.
Absolutely. It's also sad and unfortunate. You know, it's very sad and unfortunate. I remember in Tanzania, we were in Arusha, we had a program, and it was a class of 200 adults and girls from senior one up to senior four. And you could see the challenges these girls were facing. And they did not know we're going to give them sanitary pads at the end of the session. So they were engaged, they were taking notes, they were asking questions. And some of the questions that you wouldn't even imagine a girl, let's say in the U.S., would be asking you. In terms of exposure and understanding.
Yeah.
So we gave out sanitary pads and they were so excited. Oh. But then some girls asked, how do you use them? Like, how do you use the sanitary pad? Because they've never seen them, they've never used them. And like you said, it's something so basic, yet it makes a big difference whether a girl goes to school and stays in school and advances post-secondary school.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the... When we look at the Sustainable Development Goals Vision 2030, okay, the vision is for girls to get equal treatment with boys, have access to school, better access to reproductive health and everything. But how realistic is it in terms of making progress where we're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. To what extent are we going to see that type of progress where we are pleased, we are satisfied, and we say, okay, now there is real progress? Because the thing you even mentioned it, there have been some progress, but a lot remains to be done. Mm-hmm. So how do we get to that level of progress where people can say, okay, we can relax now? Is it even realistic to think that way?
I'm an optimist, so I'd like to say it is realistic. And I say so because I know the power of collaboration, the power of will. Where there is a will, there's a way. When we think about girls' health, it's not only about the health sector. It's not about nonprofits working in the health sector. Talking about health and education, about adults and girls, about the youth, about maternal health, it's about all sectors coming together. It's pointless to drive girls to school, yet there are no roads to take them to school. There's no infrastructure. There's no electricity. You know, so we need the Department of Finance. We need the Department of Transportation. You need the Department of, you need pretty much all departments to be talking to each other, to be engaging, and to prioritize this as an issue for their country. And to understand that, you know, not only nonprofits will be running the programs or make this a success, they need to buy into it. Yes. They need to prioritize this. This needs to be top of their agenda if they want the GDP to grow, if they want countries to prosper. And like I normally say, you know, for Africa to become, to come from, for many of the African countries to come out of that developing category, they need to all buckle up and be on the same page. And that means investing in their people, investing on the people that really are going to make the economy work. And that is your young people. Your young people. So they need to be investing in them. And if I think if countries really do that, it's achievable. I don't know if it'll be achievable 100% in terms of achieving all the SDGs. There are 17 of them. I'm not sure if we can achieve 100%, but I believe we can achieve more than 50%. Mm-hmm. And it's about people coming together, about egos being put aside, about self-interests being put aside, and really focusing on the purpose of humanity, lifting up the people that need to be lifted, and countries collaborating.
What is the role? I mean, they have a responsibility and a role to play. When we look at African governments, and a lot of times we tend to rely on NGOs to be the solution. And we understand that governments have a role to play.
Right.
But how do we really make them understand and have them fully engaged in this race, if I can call it that?
So I'll speak for Childbirth Survival International, even though we're, you know, small funded nonprofit, but we're mighty in the sense that we're impacting communities in the ground. But then also we're able to engage with policymakers. And we have been able to do that starting at the community level. So you have leaders who are part of the government, but they're at the community level. And beginning with them, taking the conversation to them, having them at the table, and then let that process kind of unfold through the different levels. So we do work at the community, but we also work with government leaders at the government level. And we are able to inform and let them know of, you know, what the programs that we're running on the ground and what the impact is and what some of the solutions can be if they're also part of the solutions. And it's a slow process. A lot of these policies cannot be changed overnight.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll give an example of a policy that might not necessarily be a good policy. In Tanzania, all women are required to give birth in a health facility. And that's a good intention. However, going back to needing different players in the game, how can they get there if there are no roads? How can they get there if the nearest health facility is 50 miles away? There's no ambulance, there's no electricity, there's no... So you need other stakeholders to be part of this, and also the private sector. We need businesses to also be part of it.
Okay. Well, Tausi Swede, it was so nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lenore. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank Tausi Swede, our guest. She's founder and CEO of Childbirth Survival International, CSI. For more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com. Also, join us on facebook.com/healthchatvoa, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to all of our listeners and all our partners, stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.